There was a great fire the night Marianne Nichols died.
The man who killed your lady was copying Jack the Ripper.
You've no idea how much pressure I'm under to replace you with a more senior officer.
I can't believe this guy isn't leaving a trace. We're getting nothing from forensics.
He's creating the world for you. The same murders, the same mysterious suspects.
Ripper fans, the killer, and you're his, what, mentor? Special advisor?
It's possible. It could be him.
This is impossible. There's nobody here.
The kidney and uterus are being removed.
The CCTV from the car park shows a van. It's from AC Maduro Health and Safety.
We've got a murder scene!
Ask Joe, has the killer sent the kidney yet?
Blood seeps from a brown paper package. Whitechapel. In DS Miles's kitchen, photos are taken of the blood-soaked package. Miles and D.I. Joe Chandler stand in the doorway.
This is my home.
Rupert Penry Jones. Miles looks up at Chandler with an angry grimace.
My son picked up that parcel.
There's half a kidney inside the parcel. Phil Davis.
My job to keep this stuff outside the house, not let it in the door.
He shakes his head.
I let him down.
Chandler stares gravely into the kitchen. Steve Pemberton. Miles looks away.
It's Mary Boosfield's kidney.
Half of it.
Half. Jesus. Get it off my table!
To Two Soccos, written by Ben Court and Caroline Ipp.
This letter came with a package.
A letter in an evidence bag.
It's handwritten. Addressed to you. I think it's safe to assume it's from the killer.
The words from hell flash up. Produced by Marcus Wilson.
What's it say?
It says, Mr. Miles, sir, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman. Reserved it for you. The other piece I fried and ate. That was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife that took it out if you only wait a while longer. Catch me when you can.
Exactly the same as what the Ripper wrote.
What?
I've done my research as well, you know?
Handwriting's unusual. The way you shape the letters, it's Eastern European.
Miles frowns at Chandler.
I've done a lot of courses.
Miles eyes him incredulously and walks off. A flashback. The bloody knife is held over the letter. A gloved hand wipes the blade clean. Directed by S.J. Clarkson. Day, East London, at Maduro Health and Safety.
A woman was murdered in one of your vans. We need to find the driver quickly, and with all due respect, Mr. Maduro, you don't have a filing system.
If you can't help us, we'll call the vat man in.
No,
you
left this lot sorted. No, vat man, not necessary. I need secretary, but how could I ask someone to work in a place like this? No, I have a filing system. Please, let me think.
Mr. Maduro?
It's coming to me. Night before last, you say. KFC. No, I have many drivers, all hard workers, you know. Poles, Albanians, you know what I'm saying?
That's off the books, then.
Well, everyone wants cash, don't they? Ha! KFC.
Maduro picks up a KFC box.
Ha! I told you I have a system.
Underneath is a folder.
Driver's name will be in there.
He hands it to DC's Sanders and Kent.
I'm going to release Bucking today.
No! Charge him.
With what? We have no evidence of collusion.
I'll think of something.
We believe the killer relies on him for advice, right?
So?
The last victim, Mary Kelly, is his most complex murder. He'll have a lot of questions. Let's give him his mentor back. Let him get in touch.
Fine, we put him on surveillance.
They're outside.
D.I. Chandler.
I've got a name for the driver.
The van, sir.
No.
He works at the hospital.
If you've got a pen, I'm going to have to spell it for you.
Go ahead.
Anthony Precia.
A figure in a long coat with a knife. A cell door's opened.
Bucking.
Oh.
Am I free?
Yeah.
Bucking stands. Rotund D.C. McCormack leads him down a corridor.
I filled you all. Filled poor Mary, filled the inquiry. Filled all those who had faith in me.
Shut up.
The gate is opened. At the hospital.
Dr. Kerr, this is D.S. Miles. Do you have a minute?
Yeah, but if this is about Emma Jones, you should really talk to Dr. Phillips. He was the one who treated her when she came in. John, this is D.I. Chandler, the detective I was telling you about.
I'm afraid Emma Jones is still in a coma, but I'd be happy to help if I can.
We're looking for a porter named Anthony Pritchard.
Philip stares.
The morgue man.
The morgue man?
I'll show you where to find him.
Dr. Cohen leads them out. Dr. Phillips goes back to talk to a red-headed woman. Cohen, Miles and Chandler march down a corridor of the hospital. They go through double doors and turn left. They reach a door on which is written Mortuary Restricted Access in big red letters. Cohen swipes a card through an electronic lock, then types in a code. Chandler rubs his temples. They go into the mortuary. Medical tools are laid out on a shiny silver tray.
Hello?
They traipse through the mortuary.
Great. He's not here.
Wait a moment.
Cohen lifts the receiver of a phone on the wall and dials. A man on a metal trolley sits up and switches off his beeper.
This is Anthony Precia.
Pale, muscular Anthony glances over.
So, you're the morgue man.
In an interview room, Anthony fidgets.
You must enjoy the company of the dead.
The dead? I don't care. I want to sleep.
You're 23. Is that right, Anthony?
Yes. Well, I know I don't look too good for my age, but come on. 23? What the hell you been playing at, son?
I lived through a war.
In Kosovo?
Yes.
He has marks on his face.
I see my family killed. I see my house burned. I am shot. For them, I'm dead man.
A wound on his chest.
But I live. I come to England. I work. I eat. But I'm dead man.
You must get flashbacks. Nightmares. I bet sometimes you feel like you're going to explode.
Anthony stares ahead.
So what do you do then? You go and look for a woman?
For a woman, you need time. You need money.
Yeah, why waste time and money, eh? You can do what you like once they're dead.
I don't know what you said to me.
How long have you worked for AC Maduro Health and Safety?
I know work there.
Driving vans for Mr. Maduro?
I do not know Mr. Maduro.
Well, he knows you. He hired you.
No, not me.
All right.
Anthony, tell me about the work you do.
I work in a hospital. I work in kitchen and bricklaying. Sometimes I work in factory, but it's not good there, I think. They do not always pay.
Well, Maduro pays you, doesn't he? Cash in hand.
I do not know him. If I know him, I tell you.
Have you heard of Jack the Ripper?
Anthony nods.
The experts reckon he was a foreign fellow like yourself.
I no work for Maduro, no work for Jack. As a Russian, he knows where to get jobs. But he's a bad man, I think.
You're gonna stop with all this helpless asylum seeker crap and start answering the bloody questions. Or you'll regret the day you ever set foot in this country.
My mother is dead. My father is dead. My brother, my sisters are dead. What can you do to me? I have nothing for you to take!
Miles and Chandler glance at one another. They burst out of the interview room.
We need to get Maduro in to formally ID Precia, and then we can get past this whole pretense of him not knowing anything about the van.
I'll fetch him myself.
Miles strides off.
McCormack, trace the parcel. See if anyone remembers Precia selling it to Miles.
Cove. I hate witnesses.
Necessary evil.
Well, they're all bauxite, memories like goldfish.
Can't make a case without them.
McCormack makes a face at Kent, the figure with a knife. A police lineup.
Okay.
Maduro sits behind one-way glass with Sanders.
Take your time. Look at each man carefully. When you're satisfied, you tell me which man you hired to drive for your company.
Maduro looks along the line of men. Anthony's fourth from the right.
You made a mistake. This is the wrong lineup. Anthony's not even there.
Sanders looks at Maduro open-mouthed. Pallid Anthony stares ahead impassively. The blooded knife, a hand places the half a kidney in the box. In the incident room, a witness is shown the brown package.
Yeah, I remember that parcel.
Really?
Well, I remember him. I knew he was up to something. You could tell, innit? Oh, I didn't like him at all. He made me think of the devil.
What do you mean, the devil?
Like an evil presence, you know? Oh, he has this parcel, and he wants to know his first-class post 100% reliable. He doesn't want his parcel to go missing. I tell him he can have it recorded delivery, but he don't want to know that. So I tell him, you've got Liz, why don't you walk it around yourself? It's only around the corner, innit? I couldn't see why he had to post it when he could have easily taken it himself.
Can you describe this man?
5'9", medium build, not fat or nothing. Staring eyes, like a wolf. He had a hat on, one of those blue felt ones with a little peak. Big moustache. I thought like maybe he wasn't English, but he sounded all right.
And what about the colour of his hair and his eyes?
Dark. Very dark, all over.
You mean black?
I mean his aura.
The officers exchange glances.
So if you saw him again, would you recognise him?
Yes, I would. You want to see him? We have CCTV.
I don't believe this. That's fantastic, Mrs. Bookie. I wish all witnesses were like you.
She takes two videotapes from her bag. They watch the footage. They fast forward.
It's Fevron, actually.
A mustachioed man in a hat.
That's him.
He wears gloves and a long coat.
You sure?
Yeah. That's the man who gave me the parcel. See? That moustache and the hat?
The kidney. Someone writes the word kidney. Maduro and an officer do an e-fit.
Stop. That's the man I hired. That's Anthony.
The e-fit face is almost an exact match with the guy on the post office CCTV. He's pale with a thick moustache and close-cropped receding hair.
The killer stole Anthony Preacher's identity and used false documents to obtain a job at AC Maduro Health and Safety. The Anthony Preacher we arrested had no idea his identity had been taken. He's a genuine refugee and has no connection to the murders. Now, this is the man that sent half of Mary Boosfield's kidney to DS Miles.
They're in the incident room.
This is the man Mr. Maduro hired.
He holds up two pictures.
It's the same man. This is our killer.
I know him. I mean, I know I've seen him before.
Get the mugbooks. Find him.
Sanders looks through.
I've seen him, I know it. I remember those eyes, they give me the creeps.
Give him some air.
The other officers shuffle backwards.
You take your time, look at one face at a time.
Saw his face recently.
Sanders studies the mug shots.
There's a picture.
Chandler scrutinises Sanders.
I know it, I just know it.
Sanders roughly folds closed a page of the mugshots. Chandler goes into his office and gets Buchan's Ripper book. He opens it to a certain page, lays it down in front of Sanders, and points.
Is that him?
Yeah. Yeah, that's him.
Sanders points to the old photo.
That's Severin Kozlovsky. Hanged in 1903 for poisoning his wife. Abeline, the detective who chased the Ripper, thought he was the one.
We're not getting any closer to finding this guy, and he knows it.
Chandler grabs the book. Sanders turns to Miles.
Sorry, Skip.
Nice. Right.
He pats him.
Be on traffic tomorrow.
Miles laughs. The photo. A drawing of a policeman being taunted with the caption, Blind Man's Buff. Buchan leads a tour down Hanbury Street.
Nothing remains of number 29 Hanbury Street. And this is as close as we can get to where the body of Annie Chapman was found in the backyard. Now, Annie Chapman had three children.
He thinks.
Emily, Ruth, Annie, Georgina, and John. Poor John was a cripple. And Emily died of meningitis. Annie took to drink, and her marriage fell apart.
Get to the murder.
It's not enough for you that the poor woman died.
What about the new Ripper? He's been killing them around here. Why don't you take us to those murder sites? At least they exist. Yeah. Come on.
This is a classic Ripper tour. Where's your decency? Your compassion?
Buchan glares at them all.
What? Murder is not entertainment. Go home.
Crawl back into your rocks.
Show us the murder site.
No.
He marches off, then halts.
I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore.
Buchan makes off down the street. Kent is in a car nearby. He's filming Buchan on a digital camera. Twilight, the Gherkin building in the city. Chandler's at his desk.
The police have today come under fire for being slow to react to the spate of Jack the Ripper copycat murders in London's East End. Fear has gripped residents.
It's been 1 week since the death of Mary Boosfield, the community support officer found murdered in Mitre Square, who is thought to be the third victim of the Jack the Ripper copycat killing.
They're now faced with a waiting game if they are right about the Ripper theory. According to leading Ripper experts, the final murder will take place on November the 9th.
All the police know is that the victim will have red hair, and the murder will be acted out somewhere in London's East End.
The Ripper destroyed her face. He cut off her breasts, gutted her, and stripped the skin from her thighs. Mary's heart was cut out and never found.
The murder could happen anywhere, and the police are no closer to pinpointing where that might be.
All we know is this. Mary Kelly had long red hair, and her last meal consisted of fish and potatoes.
Public concern focuses on the lack of perceived police presence in the East End area of London. Police are now under enormous pressure to catch the killer before he strikes again.
At his desk, Chandler goes over the evidence. He pushes the papers and photos off his desk in frustration. He trawls the streets in his 4x4, driving past red-headed prostitutes. He rubs his temples. Day. Miles hurries down steps inside the police station. He passes several pale men with dark hair on the landing. One wears a top hat. He goes down another flight of steps.
Where's McCormick? Interviewing his third Ripper of the day. All the loonies are still confessing.
Oh, no.
Sanders is on the bucking shift. Everyone else is out interviewing Mary Boosfield's friends. D.I. seems to be living here at the moment. Do you think he's all right?
In his office, Chandler rubs his forehead.
No.
Miles hurries over to Chandler's office and knocks. Chandler looks up.
I know what you need.
Jellied eels, pies, liquor. Miles and Chandler are in a pie and mash shop. Miles tucks in, Chandler ignores his.
You gotta eat. Gotta focus, you gotta eat.
Chandler eyes the food warily.
Well, you got no appetite.
Miles heaps sugar into his cup of tea. Wearily, Chandler takes a picture of a mutilated corpse from his pocket and shows it to Miles.
I've got 2 days until he copies the murder of Mary Kelly.
Miles turns the picture face down.
I've been out all night retracing his steps. Over and over, trying to work out how he's going to do it.
He massages the fingers of one hand with the other.
This murder could happen anywhere, in any flat. She was torn apart. He completely ripped her to pieces.
Chandler rubs his forehead.
You're right about me. I'm all PR and paperwork. I can't hide it anymore. I'm not up to it.
I don't think there's one of us that finds it easy. When we're at the scene, we get on with it. As a process, we're trained. But once we're on our own, it's different. McCormack dreams of his perfect pub. Sanders takes his kids out. He thinks we don't know, but Kent has a little cry in the bogs of the car park. You say you're not up to it, but being up to it's got nothing to do with the dead. Being up to it's turning up the next morning at 9 a.m. no matter what. So eat up, sir.
Miles gives a little nod and smile. Chandler frowns, then smiles softly. He picks up his cutlery and starts to eat his food.
What about you? What do you do?
When I get home, I go straight down to my garden, my pond. Got a nice bit of seat in there, away from the house, bit of privacy.
He chews.
I feed my fish. I've got carp, real beauties. They come up, take the food out of my hand.
He smiles.
And fish save me. My job, my marriage. You want to get yourself some fish? Better than crying in car parks.
Miles smiles warmly. Chandler looks down thoughtfully. He sets down his mug and continues eating with a smile. Chandler saunters by Mitre Square, the site of the most recent killing.
Thank you all for coming.
Chandler joins Kent.
Glad you could make it, sir.
A long time now.
Thought you should see this.
What's that?
It's not a rip at all. Something else.
Many of you will have read my best-selling book.
Buchan holds up copies.
And like other authorities on Jack, I have long believed that Mary Kelly was the last victim of the Ripper. Well?
He holds up a copy and studies it.
I was wrong.
Ceremoniously, he throws the book into a fire in a bin.
I would like it to be known that in my expert opinion, Mary Kelly was not murdered by the Ripper. Kelly was murdered in her lodgings on her bed, but Jack always killed in the street. Mary was torn to pieces in a frenzy, but Jack always had an objective and he was controlled.
People take photos, Buchan throws another book.
I believe Catherine Eddowes was Jack's last victim here in Mitre Square. After her, there were no more Ripper killings.
Do you truly believe that?
A man taking notes.
I'm prepared to destroy my life's work and start again. Such is the force of my conviction.
Solemnly, he throws another book into the fire.
He's lost the plot?
No. Mm-hmm. I know what he's doing.
Kent and Chandler stare at Buchan, their brows furrowed. Chandler walks off. Chandler approaches Buchan, who picks up his medicine bag and brolly.
You going to be okay?
That's all I could think of to stop him. Not much, but it's all I've got.
They stroll through the square together.
It's still your inquiry, then?
Yeah, well, nobody else wants my job. I just want to stand back and watch them go down in flames.
Buchan frowns pensively.
Tell me, Joe. Who do you think was Jack the Ripper?
What does it matter?
I'm serious. If you can't decide who the Ripper is, how are you going to catch your killer?
It's completely irrelevant.
Well, the killer has decided who the Ripper was. You've got to see things through his eyes. This is your last chance. Who killed Mary Kelly?
Chandler frowns.
I've done all I can, Joe.
He glances behind him.
It's down to you now.
Buchan brushes past Chandler, who stares after him. The Ripper books burn in the fire. The figure in the long coat strides down an alley. At Miles's house, Miles unwraps a Whitechapel board game.
Oh, lovely. Oh, look at that.
It's a board game.
Oh, it's like a game, and it's helpful to the inquiry at the same time.
We'll have a game of that later, yeah? Much better.
Okay, Skip.
I'll get it.
Hey, give me my beer.
Miles gets up to answer the door.
Joe, lovely, come in.
Chandler enters, holding a gift in his hands.
You coming your own?
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thanks. We could have bought a friend or a partner.
You think I'm gay?
Well, it wouldn't matter if you were.
I'm not gay.
No, well, no one is on a job, obviously, but don't you worry, my boys are above all that.
Miles, I appreciate your openness and inclusiveness.
Come and have a drink, and thanks for the fish food. Very thoughtful.
Sitting round a table, they play the board game.
Well, it's obvious he's covering his tracks.
Buchan's trying to prevent the final murder by convincing the killer that Mary Kelly never happened.
Well, you can't change history.
He's trying to save a life. That you should have seen him burning his books. He was gutted.
You may have to change your mind about Buchan.
Irritating, interfering, pompous, short.
I would expect you to appreciate the importance of a man's reputation and what it costs him when he loses it.
Miles glares at Chandler. Chandler looks down.
Buchan's destroyed a name. It's taken him 20 years to build. That means something.
Yeah, all right. Maybe he didn't know who he was talking to on that website.
He's an unwitting accomplice.
Yeah, all right.
Kent looks down.
So if Buchan doesn't lead to the killer, where does that leave us? I mean, the next killing's tomorrow night.
They all stare at Chandler, who sits hunched in his chair.
I'm gonna check on my fish.
Miles gets up. Chandler rubs his forehead, then rests his chin on his hand. Miles stands by his pond. Chandler approaches with two bottles of beer.
Beer?
Oh, cheers.
Cheers.
Miles takes one and they clink bottles. They both gaze down at the pond.
If you'd been a copper back then, if you were Abilene, who would you fancy for the Ripper?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot.
Yeah, me too. What if the original Jack was also wearing disguises? What if Jack was a woman? A crazed abortionist stealing uteruses?
Yeah, that's likely.
Nurses make great serial killers. Jill the Ripper. Can't have kids herself, so she steals women's wombs. Stops them from having what she can't have.
No, women poison or they shoot you. And their victims are usually the very young or the very old.
All right, then. Who done it?
Chandler cocks his head.
Well, I think Jack would have been in his 30s. He was local, lived alone, probably lived in the middle of where the murders took place. He was a labourer, shabbily dressed, well known to the prostitutes who trusted him. He knew two of his victims quite well, Catherine Eddowes and Mary Kelly, because he mutilated their faces.
OK, you give me a profile. So now give me a name.
George Hutchinson. A witness saw him with Mary Kelly before she died, and after that witness gave her statement, Hutchinson appeared and gave another statement saying he'd seen her going off with another man. Hutchinson's statement was incredibly detailed, even down to the man's horseshoe-shaped tie-pin.
And we know what witnesses are like. No memory isn't boss-eyed.
I mean, he talked about the colour of the man's spats, the fact that he was carrying a parcel covered in American cloth. He remembered the brown kid gloves he had. I mean, all this at 2 o'clock in the morning by an unlit passageway, please. He invented that man without question so that he wouldn't be the last person to see Mary Kelly alive.
Was Hutchinson ever a suspect?
No. Police believed his story about a posh man in an astrakhan coat. They went looking for somebody quite unlike Hutchinson.
Still prefer my mad bird theory.
Miles heads back towards the house. The bloodied knife, the shadowy figure in the alley. In his office, Chandler sits at his desk. Kent strides in with a piece of paper.
Our investigation have identified the accelerants used in the Wilkes Street fire.
They took their bloody time.
Benzoin phenol collodion. They mean anything to you?
Maduro had them in his vans. Come on.
Where to, Maduro's?
No, Wilkes Street.
Chandler locks the door of his 4x4 with an electronic key. He and Kent head to the burnt-out building on Wilkes Street. Chandler unlocks a padlock. He carries a torch. They go in.
I think the killer set fire to this building on the night of the first murder. to set the right historical atmosphere. But he had no blueprints to work from, no coroner's report.
They shine their torches around the gloom.
He was improvising, which means he might have made a mistake.
Everything's covered in plastic sheeting. Chandler looks at the paper.
It says here there were 3 seats of fire.
Chandler shines his torch.
There. There.
He looks round behind him.
And over there.
You knew what he was doing then?
No, just the opposite. A professional arsonist would have set one blaze and completely gutted the building, but this guy didn't trust his tools. He went belt and braces. Set too many fires, they ate up all the oxygen in the room and stopped the fire from spreading.
Kent inspects the room, running the beam of his torch over various things. He bends to examine a burnt-out monitor.
The killer stopped emailing Buchan at the time of the first murder, didn't he?
Yes, same night as the fire.
Chandler studies the piece of paper.
Well, I think I know why, then.
Chandler looks up and hurries over to where Kent is standing.
Could be in the killer's computer.
Chandler shines his torch on it. The screen is gone. The plastic has melted and sagged.
Get this examined straight away.
Outside.
Miles, we think we found the killer's computer at Wilk Street.
Yeah, that's great, boss.
So you're coming in?
No, there's something I need to do first.
George Hutchinson lived in the Victoria Working Men's Home. It was the epicenter of where the murders took place. There's a block of flats here now. I'm going to knock on a few doors. Call it my Eureka moment.
Is that a Eureka moment? Well, don't go in without backup. It's a rough estate.
I'll be fine, Mother.
Well, we better go and hold his hand.
Miles and co. hurry down the stairs at the police station. Chandler reaches the entrance to a block of flats. He presses buzzers to several of the flats. Chandler peers in through the window.
Yeah, man, who that?
It's me, mate, innit?
Chandler closes his eyes. He goes in. He looks up through the circular stairwell. He makes his way along an outside walkway and knocks on a door. He knocks on another door. He heads up to a higher floor and knocks on doors. He's on another still higher floor, knocking on various doors from the outside walkway. He spots a man leaving his house 2 stories up.
Excuse me? Hello? Hello?
The man pulls a hood over himself and puts on a large rucksack.
Excuse me? Oh, thanks for stopping. I just wondered if I could ask you some questions about some of your neighbours.
Down on whores, and I shan't quit ripping them till I do get buckled.
What did you say?
The man whips round and punches Chandler down a flight of concrete steps. Chandler lies at the bottom, wincing. Flashes of the man in the long coat and deerstalker striding down an alley. The man crouches by Chandler and draws a long knife. Chandler closes his eyes.
Oh my God.
The man glances back to see a woman in a hijab. He puts the knife back in his bag and hurries away, leaving Chandler crumpled on a landing on the stairs. The figure striding down the alley in the long black coat. Chandler, Miles and Kent walk up the stairs.
So you've got a head injury, you need to go to hospital.
I'm not going anywhere.
You're about as pretty as me now.
Not quite, but I didn't hit every step on the way, huh?
Miles laughs. Chandler holds a tissue to his bleeding forehead. They reach the flat that the man came out of.
You ready, sir?
He nods.
Do it.
McCormack swings a battering ram at the door and forces it open. They go in. Inside the flat is dim. Chandler goes through a plastic curtain. All the floors are covered in transparent plastic. The officers shine their torches around. Along the hallway there are a series of carefully arranged box frames. Chandler goes into the bedroom.
Bloody hell.
Along one wall there are newspaper clippings, pictures and photos, all relating to the Ripper case. Paper eyes hang on strings.
Miles! In here!
Miles opens the door and steps in slowly. He surveys the wall, a look of horror in his eyes.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
One of the clippings reads, "Ghastly murder in the East End." A newspaper article, the words "leather apron." Crime scene photos of a Victorian victim with her throat cut. There are cuts on her face and the end of her nose is missing. Chandler and Miles exchange shocked glances. They both study an old magazine drawing. It's the one of the blindfolded policeman being taunted. McCormack opens a door and shines his torch inside.
Bloody hell.
Sir!
Chandler turns.
There's more.
Chandler goes into the other room. There are two glass heads and a mannequin head with disguises on them, two hats and a moustache.
I can't believe this.
Oh my God.
Five different pairs of glasses lie on a table.
Bloody.
Two brown bottles stand on top of a pouch labelled latex medical gloves. Medical instruments are laid out neatly. McCormack shines his torch into a wardrobe.
It's the leather apron.
The long grey leather apron hangs in the wardrobe. Chandler makes his way through the room towards a whirring fridge. He curls his fingers round the handle, pauses, then yanks it open. Miles looks over his shoulder.
I want psychos in here now. We need to go through every inch of this place.
Metal dishes from the fridge containing organs are photographed.
It's all here. Look, every last detail.
Yeah, but is there anything about Mary Kelly?
Nothing that we don't know already. She lived in Miller's Court with a man called Joe Barnett, and her last meal consisted of fish and potatoes.
Oh, well, that's really going to work.
Well, Miller's Court's just over the road from
here. No, not anymore. It's a car park now.
Well, what do you want me to say? All we know is he's going to rip her apart. He's going to kill her in her flat, on her bed, and recreate what happened to
Mary Kelly. The next victim will have long red hair, right?
Yeah. A series of Polaroid pictures.
Well, I think I found her.
Photos of a woman.
I've seen her before. She's a nurse from the hospital.
Get her ID'd and under protection. Go, now. Go, get to the hospital.
Come on, go with him.
There must be something amongst all this that tells us who this guy is.
Kent runs down a hospital corridor.
Excuse me, love.
He pushes the door open and rushes on.
Excuse me, do you know this woman? I need to find her.
One of the Polaroids of the redhead. At home, the woman throws down her coat and bag on the sofa. She places her keys on a table. She switches on the TV, then sits on the sofa to watch it.
Physician named Asclepius, who enraged the gods by bringing a dead man back to life. As punishment for this man-made miracle, Zeus killed Asclepius, but out of respect for his ability, placed the dead physician...
Her phone rings, but she doesn't notice. At the flat...
Oh, isn't it a nightmare? There are dozens of birth certificates.
One of them must be his.
Oh, I don't recognise any of their names. Yeah, Kent.
Yeah, her name is Frances Coles.
She's a midwife.
Have ID'd her. She's Frances Coles, a midwife.
Have they made contact?
Have you made contact?
No, she's not answering her phone. We think
she's gone. I can't get her on the phone. They think she's gone home.
Her address is...
Parkhamwell Road, number 17.
They've got her address.
Send a tactical unit.
Get tactical over there. We'll meet you there.
No, we need to find him. The answer must be here somewhere. The last murder will be tonight. There must be something here that points to who he is.
These are obviously false identities. I think the real man disappeared years ago and all we're left with is this. As far as we're concerned, he's an unidentified person. A John Doe.
John Doe? Oh, my God.
Chandler studies a document.
You know what the police used to call a John Doe of Jewish origin back in 1888?
What?
David Cohen.
Who's David Cohen?
Dr. David Cohen.
Cohen's birth certificate.
We can postpone if you like. I don't want to be a bother.
Oh, no, don't be silly. Come in, sit down, make yourself at home. I don't want to be alone tonight anyway.
Dr. Cohen eyes her.
Where's John?
Couldn't get away from A&E.
Oh, typical.
Said to say sorry. Wanted me to really look after you.
He proffers a dish.
I really hope you like fish pie.
I love it.
Francis puts down a bottle of wine and takes the fish pie. Cohen watches her go, his eyes narrowed and a menacing smile playing on his lips. Flashbacks, the bloody corpses of his victims. He wipes the knife of his blade with a cloth. Mary's blood-splattered ID badge. A squad car and an unmarked car pull up outside the flat. At Cohen's flat?
Yeah.
We're just about to go in now, sir.
They're going in.
Francis finishes a plate of fish pie.
Well, that was wonderful, thank you.
Great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Where's your bathroom?
It's through into the bedroom and on the left.
Cohen smiles and gets up. He pauses by the sofa and glances back at Francis, who's clearing up the plates. He picks up his large rucksack and heads to the bathroom. He closes the door behind him. A flashback, footsteps down a dark alley. The tactical unit head up an external staircase. Some of the officers are in protective clothing. One carries a battering ram. McCormack and Sanders follow them. In the bathroom, Cohen sets out a bottle of liquid transpiration, a pair of scissors and a makeup brush. He takes off his t-shirt. He peels off his stubbly beard and moustache. Underneath, he's clean-shaven. The tactical unit ascend the staircase stealthily. Cohen puts the delicate fake facial hair into a plastic tub. In front of the mirror, he opens his mouth wide and blinks. The tactical unit continue upwards. Next, he peels off his eyebrows. He unfolds a thin paper packet and takes out some latex gloves. He snaps them onto his hand. He rubs his cheeks and chin. A flashback, the figure in the long dark coat. In the bathroom, Cohen circles his neck. His bare shoulders are big and powerful. He puts on medical scrubs. The tactical unit gather round the door of a flat. Several officers aim assault rifles at the door. In the living room, Francis is going through CDs. Cohen saunters past a ridge glass window.
I hope you like ice cream.
She bends down and picks up a CD from a shelf.
Any thoughts on music?
She spins round. The police break into the flat. Cohen grabs Francis. He puts his hand over her mouth. The police search the flat. All the rooms are empty.
All clear, boss. Shit.
McCormack and Sanders go in. Kent dials on his mobile.
She's not here.
What do you mean there's nobody there?
Well, the flat's empty.
Search the flat.
Look for anything that might
tell me where she is. Mum, dad, brothers, sisters, boyfriends, whatever. I want every address within a 5-minute walk of where I am now.
She's close, I know. She'll be right around the corner, just like Mary Kelly.
We need to look for an address of where she might be. Go!
They search through the flat, opening drawers. In the other flat, Cohen drags Francis backwards. Francis struggles. She falls to the floor. The officers desperately root through the drawers, looking for clues. Cohen grabs Francis. Sanders finds an address book.
Shit.
Kent runs in. Sanders chucks him the book.
What an address book, sir?
They found an address book.
Somerford Street?
Somerford Street? No, nearer than that.
How about Leonard Street?
Leonard Street?
No, it's miles away.
No, it's nearer than that. Look, come on, guys. George Hutchinson is literally a stone's throw from Mary Kelly. The address we're looking for is like a street away from here.
Somewhere like Wentworth Street.
Wentworth Street or Thrall Street. It's as near as that. Come on, we're running out of time here.
If we get this wrong, she's dead for sure.
Sanders finds an envelope.
Got one.
Check.
Kent reads the address.
It's Bethnal Green, sorry.
Kent fingers through the address book hurriedly.
I found one. Could be a boyfriend. And he's really close.
A man called John Phillips.
237 Chapel Wharf Buildings,
Flower and Dean Street, Tower Hamlet.
Flower and Dean Street, spot on.
Got it.
Cohen hauls Francis across the floor.
How do you know she's gonna be there?
I know now. This is what he wants. I can feel it, Miles. Trust me. Yeah, all right.
Chandler and Miles leg it out of Cohen's building. They screech to a halt on a street.
Dr. Phillips is flat.
237.
Fifth floor!
The concierge calls after them. Chandler and Miles race up the stairs. Miles lags behind. In the flat, Cohen sits astride Francis on the bed, strangling her with a strip of material. Cohen reaches for a knife on the bedside table. Cohen looks round as Chandler enters. He attacks Chandler with the knife, but Chandler grabs his wrist and holds it back. They struggle. Chandler grasps Cohen around the throat and eyes him intently. Cohen knocks Chandler's hand aside and headbutts him. Chandler tumbles to the floor. Miles rushes in and grabs Cohen. Miles holds Cohen's arms down, but Cohen manages to stab him in the side. Clutching at his wound, Miles drops. Cohen flees. Chandler gets up and rushes to the door. He glances back and forth between Cohen escaping and the injured Miles.
Check the girl. I'm all right. Check the girl.
Shakily, Chandler rubs his eye. The figure in the long coat stalks through an alley. In the bedroom...
You all right?
Francis looks up and nods.
Are you sure? Miles, she's fine. Miles? Miles? She's fine.
Chandler marches back into the living room. His mouth gapes. Miles lies on the floor, unconscious.
Miles? Miles?
Emergency assistance required. DS Miles is down. Suspect on the run. He's wearing scrubs.
Chandler presses his hands over the wound.
It's okay. Just hang on, please. Just hang on.
Miles' eyelids flutter gently.
You're gonna be okay.
Blood soaks through Miles' shirt. Pale morning light seeps through grey crowds to light the sky over the city. Chandler's in the commander's office that looks out onto St. Paul's.
You failed
With due respect, sir, I saved two lives.
That lunatic is still out on the streets. How long before he kills again? What atrocities are still to come?
He won't kill again.
Why should he stop? We don't even know who he is. We know nothing about his real identity.
The 9th of November is over. He doesn't get another chance to kill a Mary Kelly. He's failed. Nothing left to live for. He'll want to die and preserve his anonymity. He wants to be a myth, like the first Jack. I think if we monitor suicides in the capital over the next 2 weeks, he'll turn up.
Well, it's not your call anymore.
A headline, incompetence, the officer who let the Ripper escape.
You could have been great. We had such ambition for you. But now, I'm going to have to cut you loose.
Chandler looks down.
Nothing but a DI.
Chandler nods somberly. He steps forward and offers his hand to the commander. The commander looks up at him, his brow furrowed, then takes his hand and they shake. Chandler smiles.
Thank you.
Chandler leaves the commander's large office, still wearing a smile. The city at night. The Gherkin building with its triangular metal grid overlaying the round glass tower. The softly illuminated tower bridge, the turrets of the towers rise into the night sky. Metal girders sweep down from the tower and steel cables hang down, holding up the bridge. Under the bridge, the dark water glistens under the streetlights. Cohen's body, still in scrubs, sinks into the murky water. His arms and legs are spread. He floats further and further into the depths of the Thames. Day. Chandler rambles through a graveyard under a canopy of leafy green trees. He wears a suit and holds an umbrella over himself. Buchan, who also holds a brolly, stands alone staring forlornly at a gravestone.
Your mother said I'd find you here.
Buchan turns.
Hello, Joe.
How are you, Ed?
Buchan looks down. He blinks.
I have to know. You looked into his eyes. What was he like?
He was just a man.
Buchan turns back to the grave.
And I am always amazed at the evil men do. Will you drink to her?
Buchan unscrews the lid of a gin bottle.
Yes, of course.
Buchan hands Chandler the gin. Chandler takes a swig and wrinkles his nose. He hands it back to Buchan.
To you, Mary.
Buchan takes a glug and screws the cap back on. He leaves the bottle by the grave.
What will you do now?
Oh, my investigating days are not over. Wherever there's a mystery, the unexplained, the whiff of conspiracy, I'll be there.
I'm sure you're the right man for the job.
Chandler smiles.
Join me.
Buchan's eyes light up.
We'd make a great team.
Boss! We gotta go!
Miles waits by some railings.
Shall I have a lift?
No. Very kind, but I prefer the bus. You see all of human life that way.
Chandler's gaze lingers on Buchan for a moment. He smiles affectionately. Slowly, Chandler turns and heads off over the soft, wet grass of the graveyard. Buchan turns to the grave once again. The gravestone reads, "In loving memory of Mary Jeanette Kelly." Miles and Chandler head out of the graveyard.
It's not all serial killers and car chases and saving the girl at the end, you know?
I know that!
Gangland murder, drug-related murder, domestics, aggravated burglary. Knock on the head for no reason on a Friday night murder. That's Whitechapel. Were you up for that?
I'm here, aren't I? Two tea bags of milk. Skip. Green tea, sir. And a biscuit. Yeah, wholemeal. Help you think.
All right, what we got?
Stab wound to the chest. Looks like a mugging gone bad.
Well, it might be. Perhaps the killer wants us to dismiss this as a random attack so that we don't dig any deeper.
Oh, don't start. Don't you have a nice desk to go to?
No, I don't. Let's go.
I mean, with the greatest of respect, 9 times out of 10, when it looks like a mugging, it's because it's a mugging.
Well, I suppose 9 times out of 10, when it looks like a domestic, it's a domestic, but it wasn't last time, was it?
No, well, fair enough, but that's the exception that proves the rule.
This is an exception.
ITFC audio description.